parking lane disturbance. The evidence given by Ms. Lupaso relates to those two groups, Group A and B, as I refer to. Group B would include the Honorable Lowe, Mashabela, Matiase, Maxson, Munsami, Nketawa. The evidence that serves before the committee also shows the members of Group B engaging in conduct as testified to by Mr. Casso. Some play, it might be the case that some play a more enthusiastic role than others, some play a leading role, others put in a stellar cameo performance, but that is the nature of creating or taking part in a disturbance. There is nothing unusual about the fact that we have a group creating or taking part in a disturbance and that there are various roles played by various persons. I now wish to move, Mr. Chairman, to charge 7. And charge 7 reads as follows. It is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13A of the Act, in that as a Member of Parliament on 21 August 2014, you contravened Section 7A of the Act by improperly interfering with or impeding the exercise or performance by the House of its authority or functions by remaining in the chamber after the sitting had been temporarily suspended so that you could leave, alternatively be removed from the chamber in order for the House to continue with its business for that day. Your refusal to leave the chamber resulted in the House being adjourned for the day. Mr. Chairman, as you will see from the, and the members of your committee, as you will see from the back of the charges, Charge 7 is a charge of contempt brought as against all of the affected 20 honourable members who face charges of contempt before your committee. The evidence that serves before the committee in relation to Charge 7 is the documentary evidence, it is the video footage and the oral evidence of Mr. Carson. In relation to the video footage, there is video footage taken with two devices, I suppose, for lack of a better term. The one part of the video footage was taken with the fixed cameras in the chamber of the Assembly on 21 August 2014, and the other being an electronic news gatherer, what we have referred to as the ENG footage, an on-the-shoulder unit, a mobile unit, I suppose. Mr. Casso referred at length to the video clips involving this charge and depicting the affected honourable members engaged in the activity, indeed, of refusing to leave the House after they had been ordered to do so. This part of the report is at paragraphs 210, page 106. It starts at paragraph 210, page 106, and ends at paragraph 232 on page 113. Paragraph 232 on page 113. The footage does show, and the evidence of Mr. Carson does show, that the affected honourable members who faced this charge of contempt were in the chamber, that they were ordered to leave the chamber, that they the chamber was temporarily suspended so that they could leave, alternatively be removed. And the evidence does establish that the affected honourable members, notwithstanding the speaker's instruction, refused to leave the chamber. That refusal was not an accidental refusal. Earlier, and in relation to the evidence of Ms. Mushlomi, the sergeant at arms, referred the committee to that part of the evidence of Ms. Mushlomi involving her interaction with Mr. Malema. Mr. Malema made it clear that they would not be removed. When it was put to Mr. Malema by the sergeant at arms, after pleading with him that she would then have to call for security to remove them, Mr. Malema in fact invited that by saying, "Babiche, Babiche, call them, call them." The Honourable Floyd Shiambu, and this is in the footage at an earlier stage, also made it clear, "We are not going to be removed. You will not remove us," or words to that effect. The evidence of the Deputy Chief Whip and of the Majority Party and the Chief Whip of the Opposition also serves before you. The proceedings of the House could not be carried on the day because the affected honourable members, notwithstanding their being instructed to leave the House, refused to do so. That evidence is uncontroversial. That evidence is rather straightforward. The evidence also establishes that the affected honourable members remained in the chamber for some 1 hour and 17 minutes. The business of the House is ordinarily, and in relation to questions to the President for oral reply, scheduled for 2 hours. The straightforward evidence of Mr. Tarso was that in his experience, 2 hours has, and in Mr. Tarso's words, never proved to be insufficient. There was no reason why those 2 hours could not be sufficient on the day in question. Mr. Chairman, I would urge that one sure way to avoid a forcible removal and a confrontation, perhaps physical, was to adjourn the proceedings for the day. One of the witnesses who gave evidence here, and not Mr. Carson, did say that things could have gotten out of hand, did suggest that people or persons could have been hurt. The conduct on the day did indeed have the result that the House was not able to continue its business for
all of the affected members
who faced this particular charge. Now, there was an engagement with both Mr. Ocasio and I think it might have been with another witness along the lines that why it is that only 20 honourable members are facing the charge of committee might do if there is evidence that others might have done the same, that is for the committee to decide. But that fact that others might have done the same can hardly be exculpated or constitute a defense in the face of the facts that serve before this committee. Mr. Chairman, I then wish to proceed to charge 5. Charge 5 is in the following terms. It is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of parliament in terms of section 13C of the Act, in that as a member of parliament and during questions to the president in the National Assembly on 21 August, you willfully failed and or refused to obey Rule 72 of the Rules of the National Assembly by speaking when you were not called upon to do so by the presiding officer, that is the speaker, and or without the speaker recognizing you. This charge 5 is a charge of contempt brought as against the following affected members of the House. Those members are Mr. Shimali, Mr. Ramakatsa, Ms. Richfield Chabalala, Mr. Gardy, and Mr. Malema. Again, there is evidence that serves before the House as to the facts on which this charge of contempt is based. That evidence is made up of the Hansard. That evidence is made up of video footage and indeed the oral evidence of Mr. Thompson. The provisions of Rule 72 are also rather straightforward. It provides as follows. Right of members to speak. A member may speak when called upon to do so by the presiding officer or to appoint the board. Mr. Carter, and in the process of viewing the video footage together with members of the committee, identified the various affected honourable members who acted in the manner as alleged. Mr. Castle identified the named honourable members. Mr. Castle identified the honourable Lichfield Chabalala, for example, who is seen in the video footage and is recorded as arriving on a number of times, speaking a number of times, and making interventions when not called upon to do so or being recognized to speak. This is also captured in the Hansard. One occasion on which Ms. Lichfield Chabalala arises without being recognized to speak or without being called upon to do so did elicit the response of Highball from the Honourable Wollumbeesa. Mr. Carter gave his evidence as to the meaning and operation of Rule 72. I've reproduced that evidence in its full extent at paragraph 245 of the submission and at pages 116 up to and including page 118 of the report. Mr. Carter was also at pains to explain such a recourse or alternatives as a member might have in the event that they are not satisfied with an answer given in the response to a question or a supplementary question. The submissions in relation to this charge, Mr. Chairman, are rather straightforward. The evidence is what it is. Rule 72 makes it very clear.
propose a division of the reeds. Whether or not the members might do so on the hop, on their feet in the National Assembly is probably a matter for discussion. And that, Mr. Chairman, brings me to charge 4. Charge 4 is in the following terms. It is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13C of the Act, in that as a member of Parliament and during questions to the President in the National Assembly on 21 August 2014, you willfully failed and or refused to obey Rule 49 of the Rules of the National Assembly by failing to resume your seat when the Speaker rose while you were speaking or offering to speak, and thereby preventing the Speaker from being heard without interruption. Mr. Chairman, those are the rules of this Assembly. Now, it might be thought that speakers in other forums behave in rather enthusiast terms. It was in one of the soliloquies in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, I think it is Mark Antony, who speaks of Caesar in an earlier moment and says, who else could raise their view above the eyes of men and keep us all in fearful servitude? That is not a posture or the reality of the speaker. It is not imperiousness. The role of the speaker and the speaker being heard without interruption arises from the rules of this multi-party forum, which this multi-party forum had imposed upon itself. The members who face this charge for are the following, and I refer here to the map of charges. It is the Honourable Shivambu and the Honourable Ramakatsa. Again, the evidence are rather straightforward and uncontroversial. Rule 49, precedence of presiding officer. Whenever the presiding officer arises during a debate, any member then speaking or offering to speak shall resume his or her seat, and the presiding officer shall be heard without interruption. Mr. Castle on this score also referred to the Guide to Procedure. The Guide to Procedure, and at page 167, provides as follows. Whenever the presiding officer addresses the House during a sitting, any member then speaking or intended to speak must resume his or her seat. The presiding officer is then heard without interruption. I would submit, Mr. Chairman, that Mr. Carter's evidence on this score, again, he is not in the news. The facts, insofar as the evidence is concerned, are and 66. The other alternative, Mr. Chairman, was simply to burden you and the members of your committee with a full task. I think I've taken the lesser of two evils. The full task without ever being available to the members of your committee, and if we have prepared them, I think it's important that each of the members of your committee receives a little bundle containing the full task, so that they can be guided by the full task in the course of their deliberations. Again, in the committee's engagement with Mr. Casso, there was a full opportunity, and all of the members, virtually all of the members of your committee, and certainly all of the members from, and certainly every party represented on your committee, had and did use an opportunity to engage with Mr. Casso in relation to his evidence. Mr. Chairman, the evidence that serves before the committee is quite detailed, made up of the oral evidence captured in the Hansard, the documentary evidence being the various bundles of documents that are placed before the members of the committee and used by various witnesses. And the committee has available to it in relation to the evidence